Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rage! Sports Rage with Gabe Morenci.
Rage all you want.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabe Morenci. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the people, the bustlers, and everybody else in between throwing it down. Sunday, Bloody Sunday has begun as the Final Four is set and three teams will make their Final Four debut for the first time in a single season since the year I was born in 1970. St. Bonaventure, Jacksonville, say what? And New Mexico State? Are you freaking kidding me? Well, I tell you what, maybe in 50 years from now, people are going to look back and say, what? San Diego State? Florida Atlantic? Miami? And, of course, the UConn Huskies. The Final Four is set. The stage is set. The band is playing. Let's do this thing. Sunday, Bloody Sunday has begun. Sirius XM Channel 159 on the Sports Grid Radio Networks. You know how we roll on the Sunday night massacre. Sunday Bloody Sunday style. Jason B. Takafin steps up and in. Major League Baseball is getting set to begin. Let's talk some futures with Jason B. Takafin. He's a smart guy. So smart, in fact, the Toronto Blue Jays trusted him to run their A-ball organization, and he won three championships doing so. Jason B. Takafin steps up and in. Ian Cameron throws it down with us, and Babano did say that Florida Atlantic was going to make the Final Four. That's right, he did. Babano predicted Florida Atlantic. FAU cashed that ticket at 30-1. Meanwhile, we're sitting on a 22-1 on the UConn Huskies to cut down the Nets. And I'll tell you what, they're now minus 130 favorites to win the national championship. I'm being offered a pretty decent payout. I'm being offered 12-1 right now. Not that I'm not going to take it. Although, let's be real, the Miami Hurricanes do have a tough battle against the UConn Huskies. Yet, if you're UConn, you got the toughest matchup here. With all due respect to Florida Atlantic and to San Diego State, UConn's going to have to get through Miami. You know, whoever wins the Miami-UConn game is going to be favored in the national championship game. But as crazy as it sounds, man, either Florida Atlantic or San Diego State are going to be playing in the national championship game. It could be an all-Florida matchup. FAU and Miami. People have been calling Florida Atlantic the Beach Boys, like if it was some sort of disparaging term, and I like what they said. Yeah, we're the Beach Boys, all right. The Beach Boys have crashed the party. FAU are getting a point and a half. The total is 131.5. UConn are laying 5.5, and the total is 149.5 in that game. We'll touch on the NBA tonight, and we'll get you caught up to date with the NBA standings, and man, this thing is pretty much as crazy as March Madness is. Speaking of crazy, Caitlin Clark, this girl is crazy. And I mean crazy in a good way. Like, what record hasn't she broken? Absolute, like, fire. I don't care, man or woman, this girl can shoot, man. This girl can freaking shoot. Caitlin Clark is the only player in Division I history with multiple 35-point triple-doubles. Caitlin Clark goes off, Iowa advance, and we cash an in-game over at 164.5. Let's roll. The late night anger management class has begun. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Sunday Bloody Sunday has begun. We're throwing it down on SiriusXM channel 159 on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates, including everybody in San Diego, California, the mightier 1090 ESPN Radio, as the San Diego State Aztecs are going to the Final Four. Say what? An improbable run. An improbable Final Four. A controversial call, no doubt, late in the basketball game that will break down. Yet, when it's all said and done, the San Diego State Aztecs will play the Florida Atlantic Owls. And this is what college basketball is all about. Despite the fact that, you know, television executives right now are probably like high on morphine because of the teams that have made it into the Final Four. This Final Four is an improbable one. It's the most improbable one since 1970. Like, you know, everything you sort of put in perspective, all right, how crazy is this? Well, this is pretty crazy. All right, this is the first Final Four with three teams that are making their Final Four debut since 1970, when St. Bonaventure, Jacksonville, and New Mexico State. Got to believe the people's brackets were pretty busted up in 1970, but I don't think there were brackets and office pools and everything else. But what we have is an improbable Final Four. The numbers are set right now. San Diego State and Florida Atlantic are up first. SDSU are 1.5-point favorites in this basketball game. The total is 131.5. This is the surf and sand, the surf and turf special. Surf and sand special. Meanwhile, we got Miami, Florida. Miami, Florida now 7-1 ATS in the last eight NCAA tournament games, taking on now the tournament favorite, UConn Huskies, who have absolutely devoured, mauled, and punched everybody that they have played. UConn are laying 5.5 points to a Miami, Florida team, and all they do is win and cover. Right, they say good teams win, great teams cover, while the Miami Hurricanes and UConn Huskies have been doing both. The total is 149.5 in that game, as the oddsmakers are expecting a track meet from Houston, Texas. And when it's all said and done, there are no teams left from Texas, as the Final Four is in H-Town. Mo Khan steps up and in. Ian Cameron, Jason B. Takafin. We got a full house. The Late Night Anger Management Class. This is Sports Rage. Then your rage.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You are listening to Sports Rage Late Night with Gabe Morenci.
The Late Night Anger Management Class. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabe Morenci. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. I got to tell you, man, it's been an awesome week of sports between the WBC and the NCAA tournaments, men's and women's. The men's has been off the hook. An improbable Final Four is set. Three teams make their Final Four debut for the first time since 1970, just to put that in perspective. But if you think this one's whacked, how about 1970? St. Bonaventure, Jacksonville, and New Mexico State were in the Final Four. Yeah, it's pretty whacked. All right, so we got a full house on the program tonight. Jason B. Takafin will join us. We'll talk some baseball futures, WBC wrap up, and take a look at some Major League Baseball futures with a three-time champion, general manager, the Toronto Blue Jay organization, A-ball affiliate. He was their GM. Ian Cameron will step up and in. But Bano's on a high. He picked FAU to win their region. He has them to go to the Final Four. Meanwhile, I played three teams to win the national championship. Houston at plus 650, Kansas at 12-1, and the UConn Huskies at 22-1. We're sitting on the UConn Huskies right now, but they're going to have their hands full with a Miami Hurricane team that just keeps winning. Larrañaga becomes just the second coach to lead two teams to the Final Four as a five seed or less, joining Larry Brown. All right, the legendary Larry Brown. And speaking of legendary, how about Jordan Miller? All right, Jordan, yeah, unbelievable performance from Jordan Miller today. That's the thing with the Miami Hurricanes. They have different guys that can beat you on any given day. And Jordan Miller was that guy today, 6'7" guard Jordan Miller. Unbelievable performance, 7-7 from the field, 13-13 from the free throw line, man. He was 20-20. All right, didn't miss a shot. 7-7 and 13-13, 27 points. But they had a, you know, collective team effort tonight. Let's bring in Mo Khan right now as the Final Four is set. Mo, and I'm assuming you did not have this Final Four predicted, because I sure as hell didn't. But I do have UConn to cut down the net, so that's not bad. I've got a puncher's chance going into the final weekend. How you doing, Mo Khan?
Well, Gabe, funny enough, we had some family friends over from Boca Raton on Friday. So that was the closest I got to FAU making it to the Final Four through some friends from literally 20 minutes down the road from the campus of Boca Raton for FAU.
I hate myself for not riding the FAU bandwagon. I was on them against Memphis, but I didn't buy into them. And I even have FAU gear. I knew some dudes on their football team. I knew a dude on their team, and he told me they were big fans of the show, and they would listen to the show all the time, and they sent me a bunch of FAU gear years ago, and here I am. I'm a traitor. I'm a traitor, but listen, it's been a wild run. It's been an unpredictable tournament, but I tell you what, going into the Miami-Texas game, at this point, I expected Texas to fall. Considering the way that the tournament had gone, Miami had been so hot. And listen, if you can beat Houston, you can beat Texas. But they were the real Texas killers, weren't they? And just absolutely crushed scalpers and ticket brokers like in Texas. Listen, it would have been ideal, right? You know what I mean? To have the Houston Cougars and or the Texas Longhorns in the state of Texas. It would have been massive. Yeah. But no team from Texas makes it. Miami crashes the party and go to the Final Four for the first time in school history.
Yeah, I mean, look, the full credit to Jim Larrañaga, right? He had five guys in double digits in one over Texas, and they didn't relent. I mean, I know they were down early, but they kept to their game plan. And that's the key about this Larrañaga team is that no matter how you look at it, their depth, as you made the point before, it could be a different guy. It could be Wong one night, it could be Pack the next night, it could be Miller the next night. That's how they've worked. And I questioned them after coming to this tournament. I thought they would be a one-and-done this year, even though they went to the Elite Eight last year. But I just think that in the way that they built up this team here, the momentum they've generated so far, there's no question in my mind that game that they'll have next Saturday will be fun to watch when they play UConn. And that's going to be fascinating to watch. I think the spread's now, what, 5.5 for UConn. But I think both teams will be running gun. They have perfect length against each other here. And that's the one thing going to watch out for is that matchup with Hurley and Larrañaga. How will they go about attacking the perimeter of each other's defense over here? So that's going to be fascinating to see playing out early on that matchup between UConn and Miami.
There, it is a great matchup. And if you're UConn, you've got the tougher matchup as opposed to Florida Atlantic and San Diego State. Yet UConn have just absolutely punished everybody that they played. They're devastating on the inside. They're devastating on the outside. They're great offensively, and they're great defensively. Like at one point yesterday, I believe it was Dan Bonner who stated that he said, I don't know. He said, I don't even know where to start praising them. They're 75 points on offense, or the fact they've only given up 45 points on defense right now. They're just lethal at both ends of the court. But if there's one team that can play with anybody, it appears to be the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the thing is, we go back to the length of Miami. They can match up well with Snogo. They can match up well with the guards for UConn. And that's really key is that how does UConn attack the interior of Miami to create that presence that they had against Gonzaga that we saw on Saturday? I think once Drew Timmy went out, You knew that game was over for Gonzaga going against UConn, but I just think right now, you think about the Huskies game, so far in the tournament, I think the average points per win for them has been 15-plus points so far against their opponents. So they can definitely run it, they can gun it, and they can spread you out, and that's what they did against against Gonzaga. But the thing with Miami is that they defend the three-point ball very well, so can they defend it well against UConn? If they can do that, take away that element of threat from the Huskies, it could definitely become more of an interior presence for either side to win that matchup on Saturday.
You know, we're seeing the byproduct of this Final Four. Why is this Final Four the way that it is? I think there's multiple reasons. If you look at Miami's instance, it's the NIL, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these players are there because the Miami Hurricane. So one thing with the Canes, they've struggled on the football field, but they've done a good job with the NIL stuff, right? There's a lot of boosters. There's a lot of businesses in Florida. And you look at the Miami Hurricane women's team, they're at the forefront of women's NIL deals. And the Miami Hurricane basketball team, quite frankly, a lot of these dudes were going to leave. It's just point blank. They said, listen, I can get paid to go play there. If you guys come up with a deal, I'll stay here. And it worked out for them. But Larrañaga is a great coach. And you got to give this guy credit, man. Like I said, he's the only coach other than Larry Brown to go to the Final Four with two different teams that were five seeds or less, right? I mean, to do it with George Mason and now to do it with Miami, it's just absolutely incredible what Larrañaga has accomplished here.
And he could have done last year, right? Because he went to the Elite Eight last season for the Miami Hurricanes. And look, this was a down year for the ACC game from top to bottom. This wasn't a dominant conference as it has been, say, five, 6 years ago. And I think now moving forward for Larrañaga, look, this team is playing with the highest of confidence right now. And I think no matter what, they can be down by 10, they can be down by 13 points. They don't care. They'll beat you up. They beat up all these teams. They beat up the two Texas teams in Houston and Miami. And the Longhorns are a big part in the last couple of days here for Miami to do so. They have that confidence now going down to Texas for the Final Four that no matter who's in their face, they're going to punch you out and they don't care what's going to be the result. They're going to get that W moving forward.
And, you know, that's the whole thing, all this, the KenPom this and the rankings and the ratings and all this type of stuff. Look at the conferences that are actually left standing right now. The Mountain West. A Mountain West that came into this tournament basically like 2-24 in the last 26 tournament games, right? But San Diego State were the one team that can't play with anybody. Miami, Florida, ACC, way down this year. Conference USA. All right, Conference USA is respected, but nobody thought, you know, that Conference USA, well, yeah, Conference USA is going to represent. No Big Ten, no Big 12, and, you know, we do get UConn in the mix here. A damn good UConn team that played against some very top, you know, that conference was really good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This year that UConn was in.
It really was. And you think about the Big East next year, right, with Patino and Cooley down, Georgetown and St. John's respectively. It's the exact thing for the 14th to widen next Saturday. Can't wait for that game.
The Big East is sort of that one conference that has won titles besides the Big 12 and the ACC. God knows the Pac-12 and the Big 10 haven't. The Late Night Anger Management Class. This is Sports Rage. Vent your rage. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like us? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. Now,
If you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Let's roll. Sunday, Bloody Sunday. This is Sports Rage. I am Gable Morency. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates. Everybody in SoCal kicking it. The Mightier 1090 audience. San Diego in the house. SDSU in the house. In their first ever Final Four, they've crashed the party. All right, let's talk. Mo Khan kicking with us right now. TSN Radio, former wide receiver and meteorologist and everything else in between with us. Let's talk about the controversial call that decided this basketball game that I thought was just outright criminal. And I saw you tweet about, okay, Creighton lost the game because they shot 11.8% from three-point land, 2 for 17. Like, it's absolutely amazing that they were that bad. But I don't think it's by coincidence. San Diego State's defense just wears you out. They're that good. Look at Alabama. Alabama with 3 of 27 the other night. So that's amazing between Creighton. You know, like you'd say, oh, Alabama. No, and I said it the other night. I said, no, Alabama shot 3 of 27 because San Diego State's defense was that good. And it's not a coincidence. It wasn't an accident that Creighton ended up going 2 of 17. Although I will say there were a couple of shots. I don't know how the hell they didn't go in. Nembhard just had a brutal final minute of the game in which he shoots a ball. It hits the left side of the rim, the center of the rim, and the right side of the rim. It was like an amusement park basket. Like, it was like, come on, man. Like, how did that not go in? And it managed not to. But with all that being stated, I don't believe you can call a foul in that situation unless it's like totally, totally like blatant and obvious and someone gets tackled. I don't think you can call a foul in that spot, especially to me when you consider that the entire game was a demolition derby. They played contact physical basketball all night long, and then they decide with 0.0 seconds on the clock to call that foul. That's just a criminal act, in my opinion. Let the kids decide in overtime.
It was the right call, Gabe. This is where you and I will disagree on that front. It was the right call because you think about in that situation right there, the hands on the body, on the right hip of the shooter for San Diego State. And once that happens here, and you feel contact, you're going to go down. And that's what the player did. And the referee called it. Have saw Gene Steratore mention it in the postgame on CBS say that it was the right call. He had the best view of that angle. And as I said to you in the tweet before, he didn't shoot the ball well. Their five stars went 35 minutes plus in this basketball game, Gabe. They had no bench production compared to San Diego State, which had 12 points off the bench itself here. So if there's any issues from Creighton, they didn't shoot the ball well and didn't get anything from their bench. And I think, quite frankly, that team wore down, as you saw in that second half. Nembhard did not have a great last 5 minutes of the game here. And Mensah was controlling the paint at both ends of the court. And that's why San Diego State won that basketball game, because they were more resilient and had a better bounce attack to what the Creighton Blue Jays couldn't do in that second half.
Well, I think, no, there's a key, and you'll notice all these teams that are still playing have made plays late in games. That's been the key, right? They've made shots. They've punched back when it appears, all right, oh, boy, here comes the other team, or here comes the favorite now. They've done a great job responding and counterpunching, but I'm not going to disagree with anything you said. I think two things can be right at the same point in time, though. It is true. San Diego, and I'm not saying San Diego State didn't deserve the win. You know, I just gave him credit for holding Creighton to 2 of 17. But at the same point in time, they let everything go. I don't care. Call that foul with 3 minutes, you know what I mean? 3 minutes left in the first half, sure. Call that foul in the first couple of minutes of the game, sure. But if you're going to let the players beat each other up all night, and in that, like, basically, I mean, to me, that's like calling pass interference on a Hail Mary, bro. When there obviously is all the time. You know what I mean? If you want to get technical, everybody jumps up and you can say, look, he hit him. You know what I mean? He hit him, right? And, you know, they never do it, though. They never call it. It's a free-for-all. It's like, listen, you put yourself in this position. It is what it is. It's a free-for-all now. We all know it. It's rare. You know, we have to go back, actually. We're going back a ways, but I'm wearing a Michigan jersey right now as a Michigan fan, but it is true.
Right.
I even rewatched it recently for whatever reason, and even before this conversation, and it's funny because when I watched the whole last plays of the sequence at a Michigan Seton Hall game, in 1989, It was a bad call. It was like, wow, they put Ramil Robinson on the line for that in a, you know, in a national championship game. So, but it's pretty bad. You know, to me, you know, it's a bad call when you have to go back to 1989 to find something like this that happened.
You know, we can talk about the Super Bowl, right? With Bradbury.
Yes, very similar, actually. Like, do you call it or don't you in that spot, right?
Exactly.
So what was worse? I thought that was more egregious in the Super Bowl than what happened tonight, in my opinion.
Look, Gabe, you know how this is going to be played out. If that call didn't happen, right, the referee would have been docked points by the officiating crew that's overseeing that game itself, saying you missed that call. It's going to be a minus 4 points on your credit card or on your report card going towards next season. He made that call, and he might have to explain to his head official that this is what I saw, and he saw the hand on it. The moment you lay a hand on someone's body, Gabe, you're opening up that Pandora's box. Is that going to be a foul, yes or no? And that was the reason why.
But let me ask you.
Why I called it a foul. Yeah.
If they don't call that foul, do you think Dutcher is flipping out and thinks that, oh my God, or you think he just like turns around and gets ready for overtime?
You know, I've called a lot of basketball games in my life. There's no question that Dutcher would have definitely vented his frustration. But the thing is, Gabe, you think about at that point for Creighton, things were going against them. That last three and a half minutes here where they thought
it was
Salas called it was not going in their favor, right? And you saw McDermott on the bench cussing out the referees, trying to figure out why there isn't anything going for him. And the thing is, as I said before, Mensah really changed the game, and he made Creighton look scared to attack the rim because of his length that he had out there rim protecting. And I think that really changed the optics for what they wanted to do. And the Bigs for the Blue Jays could not get any influence at all. And you saw what happened in that last 5 minutes where it became gritty and tough. San Diego State had it, and Creighton did not have that in the final 5 minutes.
No, I can't argue it. And I tweeted it out during the final minutes of the game, in which I said, I didn't want to bring up the Lord's name. So I didn't want to say like, oh, God doesn't want him to win. But it was like the basketball gods or something. Because as I stated, there were a couple of shots, Mo. Like Nembhard came in. I think there was about 45 seconds left or something. It was a 2-point game. It would have tied the game. And he came flying in. He did everything right. And it's not like he shot it too hard or something. You know what I mean? Like last night, Noel, man, like Noel went in for that layup and it's like, dude, like you really put too much spin on that ball, right? Like Nembhard came in, it was a perfect soft touch. And like I said, like I'd never seen a ball, it bounced like it was softly bouncing. No, that's why I thought, oh, it's going to go in. It hit the left side of the rim, bounces up. Instead of going in, somehow bounces forward off the front of the rim. And then you figure, oh yeah, it's going in now. And then somehow it just sort of rolled to the right side of the rim.
I swear,
it was like an amusement park. It was like, man, that's like a crooked rim, man. Like, come on, man. Like, how did that not go in? He was like, I thought there was another one, too, with Kalk Brenner. There was just a few shots where it was just the old classic in and out. And I actually thought, Mo, around the 3-4 minute mark, I was like, yeah, this is just not meant to be for Creighton. Like they're gonna lose in a bad way, in some weird way and painful way. And lo and behold, it happened the way that it happened. So yeah, I'm not taking anything away from SDSU. SDSU deserved to win, but at the same point in time, I don't call that. You know what I mean? I do believe, I'm old school, I do believe that you call the game at what time of the game it's at. Like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have called that.
I thought the game turned for Creighton in the first half when they had a 6-point lead on SDSU. They had them on the ropes, and they couldn't put them away in the first half, and they allowed the Aztecs to stick around and stick around and stick around. And think about it, Gabe. San Diego State did not shoot the ball in the second half. Well, I think at one point they were like 2-14 in the first like 10 minutes of the second half. And Creighton couldn't pull away, and that's what you kept them alive. And I think, again, it goes back to the point. Creighton could hit their 3-point shots, and the Aztecs couldn't hit their shots in the early going in that second half. And unfortunately for the Blue Jays, they couldn't really cash in on that moment to have that glory to go to Houston now to play for the Final Four.
Well, the UConn Huskies are now favorites. FanDuel has UConn is -125 favorites. San Diego State are the second choice at +360. The Miami Hurricanes are +490. Florida Atlantic Owls, 6-1 right now to cut down the Nets. Who do you think is going to win? Who do you think plays in the national championship game? And then who do you think wins the national championship game?
as cool as it would have been to see a Boca Raton Coral Gables battle in the final matchup on Monday, I'm going to go UConn San Diego State. I think both those teams have a little bit more edge in this basketball game. I just think UConn right now is clicking and peaking at the right time. I think Miami will make it tough. I think Miami will make it very close, and this might come down to the final 3 seconds from that ball game. But I just think UConn right now, with what they have from a paint presence and from a three-point shooting presence, could definitely really make it difficult for the Hurricanes. So give me the Huskies and the Aztecs to play next Monday on April 3rd.
One thing, if you look at the remaining coaches, they all have, you know what I mean, they all have something in common. Listen, Danny Hurley's kind of a nut job, but at the same point in time, you'll notice, like, he...
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Most coaches will downplay things, but he's like, we have a great team. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, my players are great, we're great, and we're playing great. Come and get us. Come and beat us. Like, but he's having fun with it. Like, he's joking with the refs, and he's joking before the games. All these coaches are pretty loose, actually. More with Mo on the other side. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You tell that son of a bitch no Yankee is ever coming to Houston.
Not as long as you bastards are running things.
Speak up, George! I can't hear you! You tell that son of a bitch no Yankee is ever coming to Houston. Not as long as you bastards are running things.
I'm the late night anger management class. This is Sports Rage. I am Morency. Caitlin Clark, Iowa Hawkeyes. Caitlin Clark, 41 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. Number 2 seed Iowa beat 5 seed Louisville, 97-83. We cashed the over in this basketball game. And the Hawkeyes are going to their first women's Final Four in 30 years. If you haven't watched this girl play basketball and shoot a basketball, you're missing out. Man, I thought Paige Beckers was great, Mo, which she is. But Caitlin Clark, just unbelievable. Like, just her, the shots, like the long distance shots. I think they said tonight she's shooting like 58% or something from like 20. That was what it was. It was like 57 or 58% from 25 feet or deeper. And like just the quick motion. It's not like she's just hitting these easy threes at the top of the key or something like that. And she's wide open because she has people in her face all the time. And she's hitting like Steph Curry type bombs. She's hitting in the corner threes with like quick, you know, catch and shoot. You know what I mean? Catch it, shoot it. Man, she is amazing. Absolutely amazing player. This women's tournament is lit. The South Carolina Gamecocks are on a next level right now. The women's tournament has gotten so much better over the years. And it's also gotten much bigger and more popular and, like, just crazy. Great great women's tournament we have going on, too.
Yeah, no question. Like, I caught the end of the Iowa game against Louisville. Louisville made it close, right? They came out there. They pressed. They went on a 12-1 run in the final, like, 2.5 minutes before the 2-minute mark of the fourth quarter. But there's no question that for Iowa right now, for what they built up here and what they have as an arsenal to work with, she is definitely one of the top players, and she could come back right for another year at Iowa and not go to WNBA next this summer, I think. So I think right now for Iowa, they're a team to watch out for going towards the Final Four. But I just think right now for South Carolina, I watched a bunch of Gamecock games this season. game, and the one against LSU that he had it back on Super Bowl Sunday. They're definitely the queens of the manor right now for what they've built up here. Don Staley has been tremendous in the recruiting element, and they're this tough-nose, blue-collar type of mentality that they have, that silly edge that she's brought to this team here. And I just think right now, I don't know who can beat them at this juncture of this tournament when they go down to Dallas on Friday and Sunday of next week.
Mo Khan throwing it down with us right now. South Carolina are currently minus 250. South Carolina actually, you know what? 250 versus the field, actually. Plus 180 right now. Minus 250, and the field is plus 180. So you get everybody against South Carolina. That's how good they are, Mo. You get everybody at plus 180.
Yeah, and look, I know they got Maryland tomorrow. They should wipe Maryland off the court here tomorrow. But look, right now, for what the Gamecocks have built up, they targeted UConn to be that preeminent pinnacle. They surpassed them right now, and they could now go on a run here, Gabe, where they can win multiple championships in a row and create their own dynasty down in Columbia.
You got LSU plus 460, Iowa 7-1. Mo Khan throwing it down with us. All right, Mo, let's get into some NFL football. The top quarterbacks had their pro days. Three of the top quarterbacks, with Anthony Richardson coming up later in the week at Florida. So we'll start off C.J. Stroud. Let's start off with C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud killed it. He did everything that he was supposed to do. Now, listen, I think pro days are basically a waste of time, personally.
Agreed. Agree.
Yeah, like, what's the point? Like, you know what I mean? All right, he's thrown to, you know, I don't know. It is what it is, but whatever. And then people always come away. The thing is, some teams actually really buy into this stuff, right? Like Zach Wilson's pro day is like what really sold them. They're like, oh, look at these throws that he's making. But as far as the pro days to get people caught up to date, pretty much everybody was who we thought they were, to quote Dennis Green that we heard coming into this, right? So C.J. Stroud made every throw. He looked great, and he's clearly the best thrower in this draft. Like, he threw the deep ball well. He threw the short passes well. He showed touch. He showed strength. He showed everything. It was basically a passing clinic that he put on. Okay, he didn't run. Right, he didn't run the 40, and he doesn't want to show people his speed. But as we saw against Georgia in the playoff game, that, you know what, he can make plays with his feet if he has to. So he lived up to the hype. We should note that Frank Reich was there, David Tepper was there. So you know it's real when the owner is there too. So the owner and his wife and Reich, they all went up to dinner. So the thing is, Tepper and his wife and Reich also went to the Alabama stuff. So they're going everywhere. So Bryce Young, same thing. Bryce Young had a great pro day. Will Levis did his thing, in which, you know, it was funny. I was reading about Will Levis and I saw some video, and they were like, Will Levis was Will Levis. They said, you know, they said he threw a couple of 70-yard bombs on a dime. He missed a couple of, like, screen plays. Like, you know what I mean? Like, basically, he missed, like, easy passes. He made hard ones. At times, like, he sort of was a little wild with his passes, but he also throws a fastball. The thing with Will is, they're trying to teach him to get some arc. You were a wide receiver, Mo. He's got no arc on his ball. Everything is a laser straight fastball, right? And, man, he can, you know what I mean? He can spin it, right? This kid can throw it, man. He's got that. Like I said, he threw a pass. He threw multiple passes 70 yards in the air, guys. So he had that ooh-ah type of thing. He's 6'4". He's 230. He's ripped. But he's also, he's almost too ripped, Mo. He's a little tight in his motion. You know what I mean? Everything's like kind of rigid and sort of, you know what I mean? But he can really throw it. He's got a lot of Josh Allen in him, but Josh, I think, is a better athlete, a little bit more smoother than he is. And it's funny, I was reading that Jordan Palmer, who really helped Josh Allen, Jordan Palmer's been working for the last 3 weeks with Will Levis and working on his footwork and his hips and everything. So I guess long-winded way of putting it is all three quarterbacks kind of are who everyone thought they were.
Yeah, look, I had an NFL scout tell me years ago, what a pro day does for all of us is to reaffirm what we've seen on film and in person, right, for the last 3-4 years of their game film. And what C.J. Stroud did, it was reaffirm that he definitely is the most accurate passer in this draft class and that he could go number one. I think for Bryce Young right now, you wonder if he was, if at his pro day, if he was below 200 pounds, because, look, he bulked up for the pro day and for his NFL combine. They said, look, I can get 205 and beat that level. But we all know most likely than not, Bryce Young will probably play between 190 to 195. I think for Will Levis, the best comp I can give you, if you remember this game from 2007, Brady Quinn, right? He came in jacked. He came in throwing 225, I think like 25 reps at the NFL Combine, and had that sort of that stiff motion that he had coming to the NFL. And the same thing with Will Levis. And that's the fascinating thing for Will Levis right now, is that he might have that fall, because we know that Stroud and Young will go one or two or whatever it might be in the top three. Richardson might go top four, which we think is the case to be, and Levis will be the wild card, because if he gets past the Rays at seven, he might have a drop, and there might be a team that might trade up for him, which might be a blessing in disguise, because, again, they might say, look, this kid has potential. He's a little bit raw in his throwing mechanics for what he does on the football field. But let's not forget, Gabe, last year at Kentucky, he was banged up, didn't play healthy, whereas 2 years ago, he had a really good year for the Wildcats back in 2021. So I think Levis has great potential. It's a question of where he lands from an NFL team perspective, and he might drop. If he does drop, and then more established quarterback room comes in play for him, he could end up in a better place than, say, AR or anyone else like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young that might go top three or top four in a month's time.
I agree with you. Ideally, the Raiders would be a good situation for him, because they've got Jimmy G, and he wouldn't be expected to play right away, and he could learn, right. And if McDaniels is this quarterback guru, which I actually question and doubt, but that's another story. So C.J. Stroud right now, he's a 3-1 favorite to be the number one pick of the draft, Mo, and are you buying in? I mean, really, the bottom line is, if you look at Frank Reich, and you look at the quarterbacks that he has preferred to work with over the years, right, they're a lot like himself, tall. Like, you know what I'm saying? Frank Reich's a big guy. But honestly, like, they're downplaying that because they don't want to make it obvious, right? They're trying to downplay it. But no. He's, you know what I mean? He loves Bryce Young as well. But it seems to me that C.J. Stroud will be that guy, because I think Carolina, I think they think that, and why wouldn't they think that, you know what, we could win a division now. Like, with a rookie, right? We can make some we can make some noise. We'll have a quarterback on a rookie deal. We can spend money. We could be aggressive. And let's be real, Mo. They went on a nice run last year, man. That defense had them in football games, even after they traded McCaffrey and stuff. And they had sort of a revolving door at quarterback, and they were still winning football games. And there is no doubt. I don't know if C.J. Stroud will be the best one 5 years from now, but there is no doubt, out of all these rookie quarterbacks, the most ready to step in. And so is Bryce Young. But if, you know what I mean, I think C.J. Stroud is just like, he'll be a week one starter for the Panthers, and they could win football games with him.
Yeah, there's a reason why Carolina traded up to number one, Gabe, because they realized the guy that they're targeting at that position they had at number nine was not going to be there, right? They knew that they had to move up, and the best route was to get to the top pick and control the narrative of the draft. Now they can say, look, we could go for Bryce Young, we could go for C.J. Stroud, or whoever they might go for. And I think now for Carolina, you're bang on. Their second half under Steve Wilkes was phenomenal. They had a great defense that came out and played well. But now you have to wonder, because of what they gave up for that first pick, whoever will be the quarterback for them on April 27th, Do they have enough depth or quality to work with on the offense to keep that quarterback upright? Because think about it right now, Gabe, right? They have no draft picks to work with this year, next year, pretty much, right? The O-line was a bit in transition here. You don't have McCaffrey right now. You trade DJ Moore away. So whoever will be the quarterback for Carolina may not have the easiest ride in the first couple of years, but if Frank Reich can build up that quarterback's confidence and kind of build that depth to work with under Scott Fitterer, they could be much more competitive maybe in 2025 than taking the first 2 years of that quarterback's career with the Carolina Panthers.
But look at the division they play in. The Tampa
You're right.
Buccaneers.
You're right.
Look at Tampa. Who's, we don't know. You know what I mean? Look, you look at Tampa.
Yeah.
They're okay. We'll see in the post-Brady era. If, like, the, you know what I mean? If they're, that really was a big distraction and they can move on. The Saints bring in Derek Carr right now. And you have the Atlanta Falcons as well. We'll see what the Falcons do as far as their quarterback situation. If they decide, yeah, you know what, we are gonna go with Ritter. He's our guy. Looking at the division odds here right now for this division, The New Orleans Saints are plus 115. The Carolina Panthers are plus 270. The Atlanta Falcons are 4-1. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 5-1. Would you agree that the Saints are the team to beat and are going to win this division?
Oh, without question. You think about Derek Carr going down to New Orleans. They have a phenomenal defense. If they can keep everyone underneath the cap, what they have as contracts to work with. And if Michael Thomas is healthy, you have him alive. But you have Alvin Kamara being hit by his criminal issues right now that he has going up against him right now from the alleged incident in Las Vegas. That O-line is very sound. These are elements that can help make Derek Carr a better quarterback in New Orleans, where, again, in a dome stadium, he might be much more prolific than where he was in Vegas with Dennis Allen, of course, two Carmack of the OC.
The Late Night Anger Management Class, this is Sports Rage. You know, C.J. Stroud, you know who he reminds me of? Justin Herbert, actually. They're very similar. Herbert can run. He doesn't like to run. He can run. The Late Night Anger Management Class, this is Sports Rage. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Late Night Anger Management Class, this is Sports Rage. A shout out to our boy, Craig Williams. Tuning in to the late night hours. What's up, Craig? Says got to shut things down soon. He's got to wake up in 4 hours. We appreciate people joining us in the late night hours on the East Coast, West Coast style. We're just hitting the 10 o'clock hour right now. We do this thing 9 to 12 Pacific time. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates on the West Coast. Mo Khan with us. Mo, before we get you out of here, so... Yeah, I think CJ Stroud probably will go number one, but we should note at the pro day, you know, there was a ton of, listen, there's a ton of Ohio State players that lit it up at their pro day, but in Jigba, the wide receiver, Mo, he's really, 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 really impressing everybody all the time, and it's pretty much, I think it's pretty much locked in right now that he will be the, top wide receiver taken. Mo, in this draft, and I'm going to be laying it down on that, except it's climbing right now. He's minus 200 to be the first wide receiver taken.
Well, the funny part was the best wide receiver was Marvin Harrison Jr. at the pro day, right?
And yeah, he's drafted eligible.
Yeah, exactly. Next year. But you're right. I think Jackson's going to be the guy for him. I know he got banged up during the regular season of 2022, but he's got the high potential for what he can be explosive. This isn't a deep, explosive draft class at the receiver position that we saw with the Jamar Chase class and from last year, Gabe. But this definitely is depth to be worked with. And I think for what has been produced at The Ohio State University the last couple of years of who's gone in the first round, I think Jackson has that potential to be that dude for whoever will take him in the top 10 or top 15 in this draft year. So I think, no question, he will be the favorite to go somewhere over the first receiver to be drafted in the NFL first round in a month's time.
It's kind of strange that Marvin Harrison was there. I don't really get that. Right.
Well, they're allowing underclassmen to have, you know, the ability to do pro day catches for those who are eligible, right? They want to put the players in a comfort zone with those they're familiar with. And Harrison Jr. was there because he is comfortable with C.J. Stroud. That's why he's in that pro day for Ohio State last week.
You know, it's like Cam Newton being at the pro day. It's like, come on, bro. You know, it's like the pro day's not for you, Cam Newton.